Welcome to the Private Halbert Tapes. Copywriters Gary Halbert and John Carlton are widely regarded by most direct marketing experts as the best guns for hire in the world. On June 11, 1997, direct marketers Joe Polish and Terry Hunnefeld hired Gary Halbert for 2 full days of intensive consulting about their information selling businesses. John Carlton joined the session for the first day. Joe and Terry locked both Gary and John into a hotel suite atop the Southeast Denver Marriott, where the session you are about to hear was held. Warning, these tapes contain adult XXX real-life language. If you are easily offended by military-style, hard-hitting conversation, please don't listen to these tapes. This session was recorded only for the private use of Joe and Terry. Only after the session was complete did we realize the tremendous wealth of secrets, techniques, and methodologies that these tapes contain. These tapes have had some slight editing, but in order for us to properly convey the content and impact of the sessions, it was not possible to edit everything. As outrageous as he is, Gary reveals frank opinions in these tapes that he would never say in public or in seminar setting. So again, these tapes are not for the faint of heart. So, with that warning, fasten your seatbelt and hold on as your direct marketing beliefs are taken on a roller coaster ride by the king of direct marketing copywriting, Gary Halbert.
Hello, this is Joe Polish, the most brilliant marketer on the planet. Here today with Terry Hunnefeld, Jim Fleck, John Carlton, and Sam Fishbein, and eagerly awaiting Mr. Gary Halbert. So anyway, this is our first tape, and we're just going to babble about marketing. So,
today, anyway. June 9, 1997?
Yeah. June 10, 1997. In the Marriott Hotel in Denver, Colorado. So anyway,
yes,
welcome. Hello, all of you listeners. Mr. Hunnefeld, you wanted to speak.
Yes, I wanted to talk to Sam and to John about what they each see when they're running space ads. Sam, do you do direct mail too? Or just space
yes.
ads? Direct
mail? Direct mail. TV.
Basically, the difference between what you do when you do a direct mail piece and when you do a space ad, and what are some of the, when we've all read the same books and we've all listened to the same speakers and been to the same seminars, what are some of the unique things that you've developed, the kind of your favorite things, your favorite techniques, the favorite things that you like to use in your business when you're writing ads, either direct mail or placing a space ad?
It's about 5 questions, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right,
all
at once. All right, we'll start with direct mail. And of all the advertising vehicles we use, that is the most powerful by far and the one that I use the most, because the total advertising cost as a percentage of sales is about half of what it is compared to television or newspaper. And the crux of the direct mail that I use, the majority of it, is to customers that have already made purchases in the store. And the hooks that we use on every direct mail piece, the key elements for every direct mail piece we use are a special invitation that's private for them only.
Personalization,
yeah, we personalize every letter. We use first class postage.
How much more does that cost, by the way, the personalization?
Couple cents a piece.
It's almost negligible.
Yeah, it's negligible. First class postage, we always put a return address without identifying who it is.
And you tried bulk rate too, right?
Yeah, we tried bulk.
And it dropped response significantly.
Even pre-sorted first class drops response. And we tried different size envelopes, different colors.
Tried stamps versus Indicia?
Yeah.
And Indicia will drop it too, right?
Yeah, Indicia drops it.
This is all very important.
Right. These are all important things.
So you'll use all live stamps, just like if you're doing...
I always use live stamps because you know the old story that Gary always tells. When you get your mail, when you come home every day, you make 2 piles. One pile of the one you're going to look at and one you're going to throw away. So you want to be in the pile that's going to get opened up. And that's how you get opened up.
Now, when you do like a 55-cent stamp, would you use 2 stamps, like a 32 and a 23? Would you just do like a single 55?
I don't think anybody's tested that.
Well, we did that. Gary and I did that. We did a program for a dentist. I don't know if Gary talked to you about that.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure he did because it took a big part of his life. But the first mailing we did $120,000 in subscribers off the first mailing. We used 2 32-cent stamps.
Did you mail that pitch?
Yeah.
Did you also mail the one when he was talking about doing the seminar at Sea where it says, see how shitty the weather is in whatever, Arizona? Because that was personalized. That was one of the few letters I've gotten from Gary in a long time that actually was personalized, so I thought you might have been behind
it. Yeah, Gary doesn't do a lot of personalization, but I use it in all our letters by name. We always have a free gift that we give people for coming in, and we try with a free gift and without, and the free gift always enhances it.
What are the free gifts normally?
Oh, we give them a rug. We have little throw rugs that are hand-woven. They're seconds. leftovers, that kind of thing. And then we give out silver platters, serving trays. We've given out a set of Coke glasses, nostalgic
just glasses. For showing up?
Just for coming in, yeah.
So you're always...
You always have to have something that's just for coming in, no purchase necessary. We also have a drawing for a gift certificate.
Okay, so the majority of your marketing is designed just to drive people into the store and then the salespeople...
Right, take it from there.
Okay,
yeah, so... Yeah, with different offers. And I don't know how these would relate to anything else, but we always give our preferred customers an extra discount over and above what the general public would have to pay. And we have special finance offers, and like I said, free gift certificates.
Don't your sales letters, don't they have a story? They have quite a story with them.
So, some of them do. The ones that work the best really don't have as much of a story as if you come in, you're going to save so much, it's going to be incredible. You know, that kind of thing.
But you did have some breakthrough newspaper ads back with the stories.
Well, some of the stories, again, switching over from direct mail to newspaper. Newspaper, I focused on single products, which is now a trend in the industry, by focusing on one item where normally you'd see a newspaper ad for furniture and you'd see 1,000 items on one page. They try to cram everything they've got in the store on the page. Where I started advertising one single item and would flood the store with customers because this item was so incredible. And we sold a lot of those, but we sold a lot more of everything else because people figured if that was such a great deal, everything else in the store was. So everybody in the country started copying that with a promotion called Hot Buys, where you take one specific item and you give that item away at a ridiculous price and you romance it in the ad. Tell people how great it is. And the curiosity draws a lot of traffic. I don't know how that would relate to what you're doing.
Oh, it does relate.
Now, that's a greed. Like Gary says, you got to reach out of the page and grab them around the neck and squeeze
drag them in and not let them go
the
to
greed
the
glance, he calls it.
That's a good principle to understand is the single item issue. That works with catalogs. People send out catalogs with multiple items, and we found out that by going back and occasionally going back and just selling one item, finding out what your main best item is, and focusing just on that, that you can increase response. The idea with catalog people is that they get trapped into thinking they're a catalog. It goes back
to the think they have to show everything.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at a lot of the new catalogs that are coming out, the more sophisticated ones, you're going to see one or two items per page, where they're focusing more on single items rather than trying to throw up everything they've got all at once, which confuses people.
What I have found with doing like any type of catalog mailer or any type of mailer that is offering, you know, multiple items for sale.
And you have an ad in there, you mean?
Yeah, or
one page in there or something? Is that what you're saying?
No. Say, for instance, like a, to give you an example, in carpet cleaning. The suppliers send out catalogs of all the different chemicals, equipment, little hose reels, little wands and hand tools and all these different things that they sell. And the whole catalog philosophy is you've got this piece devoted to many different, the package.
But getting back to focusing on a single item, what you can do is take a single item and target a specific crowd that you want in your store, in my case, to sell them other things related to that. Like once we ran a promotion on leather, where we sold a sofa, love seat, and chair for $1,499. And we sold a few of those, but we sold a lot more of the $3,000, $4,000 groups because we targeted people who wanted to buy leather. And once they saw the one for $1,499, they said, I want to spend a little more and get something a little nicer. So,
bait and switch.
Not really. We had all the $1,499 they wanted to buy, and we left it up to them to decide whether they wanted to buy it or not.
Benign bait and switch.
Well, you know, what I was going to say, just so we'll have it on the tape, the thing I did with the suppliers, carpet cleaning suppliers, is what I explained to this one particular supplier, that when you send a catalog to someone with multiple items to sell, instead of their focus being on one item, it's now on 100 items.
Right.
And how do you, like, focus in or hone in just on a couple of those? Well, you do it with a cover letter. So I wrote a cover letter for this guy for the same catalog he'd been sending out every month. And when he added a cover letter with four items within the catalog, go to page 12, go to page 18, go to page 23, with their special items on each of these, when I wrote a cover letter for him, one-page cover letter, and then a little insert with four items that were in the catalog, but specifically making attention to those particular items, he did $20,000 in business extra than what he had been doing just from adding the cover letter to the catalog and focusing on those items. So when I tell people, it's like, look, if you're going to send out a pitch with many different items, at least put a cover letter focusing on one or two, because that's the problem with catalogs is they've got someone's attention span is not on one thing anymore, it's now on 100, and that's not specializing right. Anything.
The key is you got to hit them between the eyes with one or two things.
Right.
Because they won't spend the time to go through a whole catalog, but people have too many time constraints.
The research we had on catalogs, the people that did the research, that took the time and the money to do it found that often there were half a dozen products out of 100 that were carrying the weight of the entire business, and they just weren't aware of it. And really advanced catalogs will portion out the space in their catalogs according to how much money that product is bringing in. There'll be one page with one product, but a lot of copy for one particular item. And then other pages will be split up into 8s or even, you know, 16s or something like that, selling a lot of different ones. But they know how much space they need to sell the maximum number of that product. There's a point of diminishing returns where it does, in more copy isn't going to sell any more, you know, filler things for something. Right. So it only needs a little bit of a blur. But say you're selling a major item, then you want to have one page, you want to devote a lot of time to it. It has to be an intelligent choice. You can't just randomly pick 4 things out of there.
No, it has to be an obvious value, or else people gloss over. The example I gave, at the time we sold the Sofa Love Seat and Chair for $14.99, the cheapest sofa you could buy at the time was $2,000. The market's changed considerably since then, so when people saw that, it just hit them right between the eyes.
The unspoken thing in Sam's advertising is you're getting a better deal than anyone else. You have been singled out by getting this mailing, and you're one of the selected few. And you're going to come in and get a better deal, you're going to get better service. You've had a lot of success with the special times, right? The doors are only open for
right.
you and,
well,
and
a few other folks. Well, I do it for a 4-hour period only. You have to come in during these 4 hours. And if you don't, it's over.
How often do you do that?
Every month. Once a month.
Once a month you have the special hours.
Yeah.
And who's invited?
People who have made purchases in the past.
Your whole list?
Yeah.
How big is your list?
We keep it down. It's actually got 70,000, but I call it down to 30,000. We have a lot of people that just come in for their free gift. And
you have a hot list too within there?
Yeah, and we're going to break that down even further.
You definitely need that. You should do the referral program thing. Would work so well for you.
What about you, John? What in the last few years, what insights do you have as to what copy you like to write?
I have some clients who have an interesting way of doing things. I will typically write a long copy direct mail piece that will go out first as a direct mail piece, and then they take that same piece and turn it into a magazine ad and run it almost verbatim. The only time it changes is if it's personalized. You can't personalize in a magazine, so sometimes the headline has to change. Or sometimes if the ad, say, had a grabber on it, then you can't use a grabber in the magazine, so you have to change sometimes the headline. But often the copy will go in verbatim as it went out. So if you got a 12-page letter, that will often come down to a 3-page magazine ad. So it's radical thinking for a lot of people to do multi-page magazine ads, but I have clients that have been making this work. The reason people don't do multi-page magazine ads is because of the cost. Salesmen at magazines and even at newspapers think in terms of a page or a fraction of a page. And you won't even find it in the rate cards how much multi-pages are. They don't know about giving discounts for it and things. People just don't do multi-page ads very much. We've got an enormous response for it, and we're running in national magazines, both in small markets and in very large markets, like the golfing market. So if you can take the hit, which is, you're talking about a large amount of money, it's worth not trimming the copy or just taking what worked in the mail and putting it straight into the magazine.
You're perfecting a sales letter first and then putting it in the
magazine. Making sure if it worked. In fact, what these clients found, they actually did a little research, and they found that a direct mail piece sent as a test to the list of the magazine they wanted to go to didn't have to break even to be able to be a successful insert in the magazine. That if they got 90% of break even, they would come back a time and a half or 2 times in the magazine.
Okay.
In other words, yeah, the magazine ad pulls better than direct mail to targeted lists, which would mean like if you're selling bass fishing equipment to bass fishermen, then and you want to go into a bass fishing magazine, then that's a very specific target.
Yeah,
as opposed to selling,
you narrow your focus with the magazine as opposed to going to a whole market that's interested.
Exactly. An interesting thing I've always thought about is why car ads. A lot of times major car companies will run the same ad in Time magazine that they will in Car and Driver. And I think that's just idiotic, because a Car and Driver reader is going to be predisposed to read long copy about a car. Why not go into some car-loving lingo and really talk it up, what you got with your new car, run a different ad in Car and Driver than you've run in Time magazine? Because Time magazine, you're dealing with a much broader audience that just, oh, there's a car ad. You know, they weren't expecting it. They just come off of something else. Car and Driver, they bought it because they like cars. They're reading about cars, and they're going on. So it's important to know what your idiom is.
Yeah, your audience. What's interesting, we're going to do some tests with Gourmet magazine and the Wine Spectator, because we found that people who subscribe to those entertain a lot, and they want their home to look nice, and they spend a lot more money on furniture than the average person who does. So that's going to be more of a...
How did you find that out?
Through research with a guy that I know in Richmond. So we're going to go after that market. to narrow down and focus our marketing strategy rather than, you know, we do a lot of television advertising, obviously. That's a buckshot approach where we hit the whole market and it's very expensive. So we're going to try to minimize that and go more into the direct mail by category as opposed to spending all the money on television.
What about writing your letters, John? What are some of the techniques you like now as far as writing?
Again, it depends where you're going to. If you're in a targeted audience, you can get much more, I call it I to Val letters. It's like, it's just you and me, buddy, and we're talking about something that's really close to both of our hearts. And that, you can really let go in that and write. Gary Halbert actually made the phrase muscle writing, which means you get down and use a lot of jargon and talk very intensely about exactly what you want to talk about, which if you're dealing with somebody who you are just bringing up the subject for the first time, have you ever thought about buying this particular product, you know, something like that, then you've got to keep the sell going a lot. You've got to bring the person in and very gently know exactly what you're doing as you're coming on. And if you come on too strong, you may lose them. If you come on too weak, you may lose them. Whereas the person who is already interested in what you've got, again, taking the bass fishing thing, if you're writing about a bass fishing product to a guy who came from a bass fishing list, you can just jump right into it and start talking about it. If you are branching out and saying to try to find the bass fishing market within the wider population, so say you're writing to people who subscribe to Sports Illustrated, you don't know if they fish or not, then you've got to take a whole different tact. So there's a different way to write for each one. But basically, funny you mention this, because I've been talking with Gary quite a bit about this. I don't know how to put it exactly. You have to fall in love with the product. If you can't care enough about your product that you can work up a frothing passion before you sit down and write, then you're probably not going to connect with the people on the right level. You need to go over the top, not over the top sales-wise, but over the top just falling in love with this product and sharing the urgency comes from a passion rather than a sales technique. It's a subtle difference. You can sell a lot of stuff with technique. In other words, you can write very fast. You can say, well, I'll just take this ad that's already worked in this particular idiom and change it over to what I want to sell and change a few words and do stuff. And that will probably work. What works a lot better, though, is when you've gotten to the point where you've internalized the writing process and you're not constantly thinking about, okay, now I've got to sell here. I've got to put some bullets here. I've got to wind up the pitch here, something like that. Once you've internalized that and you're no longer thinking about that, you can sit back and just let it happen. Which is much more like what happens when a salesman who's really hot is sitting face to face with a client. He's not thinking about, you know, I'm reeling him in, I'm doing this. It's an unconscious little love affair that's going on.